Friday Night Racing.
On Off The Ball.
And we're live. You're very welcome along to this week's Friday Night Racing. It's brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. You might have seen the new logo there, and there'll be a big new TV campaign coming your way next week, which no doubt you'll see at some point. You can visit hri.ie, or indeed you can follow the brand new Twitter account at HRI Racing. The hashtag is Every Racing Moment. Our guest this week is Madeline Tlitsky. How'd I do?
Yeah,
hey, it's pretty good. And Johnny, how are you?
How are you getting on?
Very well.
I was admiring your blazer.
Thanks very much, yeah, Johnny. You know,
you do look very sharp today. Yeah. Any occasion?
No occasion. This is just, you know, turning over a new leaf, Johnny.
Yeah.
Realise I'm an old middle-aged man and need to start dressing like that.
Yeah. When do you realise that?
Never.
Yeah.
I mean, you're supposed to go, no, you're not. That works, Johnny.
Well, you are middle-aged, to be fair. It gets harder when you go a few pints. It takes 2 days to get over it.
Three or four.
Try to play a bit of sport and you're just in bits for days after.
I did 20K triathlon last weekend.
How did it go?
All right. Sore for a week, but, you know.
Don't, fair play.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is a bit of a... You're very welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Horse racing and stuff like that. Johnny was pumping you for information on the state of horse racing in Germany there.
Yeah.
We started on about the whip ban, and then she started talking about Germany, that they were reacting in a way that was kind of a little bit worrying over there as well.
Yeah, I suppose it's very, very a lot stricter, very extreme over there, I think, you know. So, I know we were just chatting away about Germany, how it's changed from 80s, 90s when I grew up over there, and obviously I grew up in racing over there. It's changed drastically, and unfortunately a lot of race courses are actually closing.
Right.
So it's just the funding isn't really there anymore, you know.
What type of racing do they do?
Majority is all flat racing.
Okay.
Yeah, very little national hunt. They wouldn't be big into it at all, you know.
Okay.
Very few races that they have. One famous one would be, I suppose, in Hamburg. It's through a big lake, you know, very deep lake, you know. But it's really slowing down the amount of races they have.
And the flat racing, is it good standard? Do German horses tend to travel the world? And
like, there were some good, very good German horses.
Yeah, I suppose Dane Dream was, you know, she stood out, you know, top mare over there. She won the Arc. And
right.
She was exceptional, I suppose, coming from Germany, you know.
Did they take to it over there? Do you know the way, like, in Ireland, kind of everyone is half into racing to some degree. In some countries, they'd have very little interest in it. But what's it like in Germany? Is it kind of a pursuit of the periphery, or...?
No, over there, it's not anymore. It used to be big, you know. Mm. Now, I think Formula One, soccer, all this, you know, has just taken over, really. I'm not sure, really. I've kind of... losing a little bit of touch myself, like, you know, if the marketing is, you know, if they're not selling it really well enough to youngsters as well. I think the jockey school over there was closed for a while. I think it's reopened, but it's the next generation that you want to get into racing, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, it's just worrying though, because we can't assume that racing will always be popular, because there's so many counter attractions, and if you've everyone has a shorter attention span now because of smartphones and everything like that. So if you go to a race meeting and you've half an hour of nothing between races, you go to some American racetracks and they're surviving because of the casinos there at the racetrack. And it is a challenge to keep racing popular. I think we're fine in this country. We should never take it for granted. I mean, Madeline is saying Formula One is getting big over there. Can you imagine something similar over here, where people prefer to watch cars and horses? Do you know, and it's feasible. And we should never take it for granted that people will be interested.
No, it's true, and I think, you know, that's why the industry needs to keep changing and evolving. Mm. It feels like that's definitely happening. People are aware of that. So you mentioned you were born into a racing family. Your dad was a champion jockey.
Yeah, multiple champion jockey. So he was from Poland. He was a champion jockey in Poland, then went on to Austria, was champion jockey there, and then went to Germany and was multiple champion jockey over there. Won the German Derby several times. You know, sires, I suppose, like Lando. You know, he rode him in 1993. He won the German Derby. He actually beat his stablemate Monsoon, who actually did really well. Yeah. You know, as a national hunt sire, and yeah, he worked very, very hard. You know, he came from nothing and he worked his way up. Very tough man, very hard. He had, I suppose, a unique style, racing style. You know.
Right.
Very unique, very his own. Maybe not stylish, but very effective, you know. In a finish, he was just tough as nails. And yeah, I suppose maybe he kind of gave Freddie and me that kind of, you know, love for horses, for racing especially.
As and well. Was he born into horse racing as well? Like, was it an agricultural family? Or
it was completely agricultural. No horses at all, I don't think. He had to, I think, leave home at 14. So it was very young in Warsaw back in the day.
And right.
It was tough times for him. He was apprentice and literally worked his way up. You know, one of the first German-based jockeys to be invited to Dubai back in the day, Abu Dhabi, you know.
Right.
That was 90, so, you know, it was very different to Dubai back then.
Mm. Yeah. I guess he was born in Soviet-era Warsaw then, when it was like, it was tough times in Poland.
Tough times, yeah, mm. yeah. So, you know, certainly no money or horses or literally a leg up into a good yard or anything. You know, he had to graft really hard and, mm. you know, I obviously admire that, you know, mm. as an athlete, top athlete. And growing up in racing, you know, it was great for Freddie and myself. You know, we were growing up on race courses, we were traveling a lot with him, and I thought it was very exciting. You dressed up and
yeah.
you were always on the go, and, you know, you looked out for your dad, you know, between races, and it was very exciting. But you kind of learn from a young age maybe the highs and lows of racing, you know, from
that
the jockey.
To you anyway, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, yeah, from a jockey's perspective, you know, that things aren't always great, you know. So you kind of you pick up on things even when you're younger, you know. You can pick up on things and how tough it can be, you know, managing your weight, all these things, like, you know.
I think it's so much about managing the highs and the lows, and like I was up in Gavin Cromwell during the week and. The season he's had, but then Esper Dallin, like a horse that, like, of your dreams just spooks and goes back in his back mm. before just a complete freak incident that puts him out of the season, and it's just like he's having by far the best season he's ever had,
yeah.
50 winners or something like mm-hmm. that, and then something like that happens and you're just like you just can't get too high or too low, and I think a lot of trainers struggle with that as well.
Yeah,
you know, they have tough times, and you can tell from their demeanor that they're struggling.
It'd be hard not to, though.
Yeah.
It'd be hard, very hard not to. Yeah, or you know, Lady Kaya. You know, I mean, it's not just a horse. You know, that's what when you're in this business, that's what you want. You know,
mm. keeps you getting
like
up in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's very hard to take when things don't go well, mm. Or if you have an incident like that. You know, mm. it's very hard. Yeah.
Were you prepared because you'd seen it happen to your dad that, you know, the life of anybody involved in racing is about constantly losing. Like, you lose and lose and lose, and then you win.
Yeah.
And then you lose and lose and lose and lose and lose, and then you win again if you're lucky. Mm. And that's a great career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose he was very tough, and he worked his way literally up to very, like, his the training. He was stable jockey, first stable jockey to Heinz Jentsch, which would have been, I suppose, the Vincent O'Brien of Germany back in the day, you know.
Right.
And he obviously had a very good job, choice of very good horses, you know. So it was a very good life, I suppose, you know, he was able to give us as well, like, you know. But you could tell, you know, sometimes, look, all the time, things happen, you know. Horses don't always win, and
yeah.
you know, it's a tricky game. You could pick up on when things weren't going well. You know.
Does he talk to you about that? Like at that stage, are you? Is that
because, you know. I suppose he had to educate us as well. It's not
yeah.
always rosy. You know.
Was he giving you lifts to the race and back? So you were chatting away to him.
Well, you know, yeah. you're going to win today again. Yeah, you know, you'd nearly expect it.
Yeah.
You'd be like, well, actually, you know,
yeah.
we'll try.
And was that like? Did he get a good upbringing from? Or did he get a good earning from us? Like, was it?
Oh, yeah. Very, very good, you know. We had a very good life, very mm. good childhood that way, you know. So, it was very exciting, I suppose. You know, when you're with other kids in school on a Monday morning, you'd be chatting away, what do you do for the weekend, you know. It was very different.
What
we got
that
to experience.
The German Derby,
exactly, yeah.
So, how do you end up in Ireland? What's that part?
So, well, I was 18. I had just finished kind of college, and yeah, it kind of came up in discussion. What would we look at? Maybe trying something new, you know, new culture, new language. We had friends and connections to Ireland through racing. Had, you know, several holidays here. Always loved Ireland, and there was an opportunity there for my mom and Freddie and I to go, and it wasn't easy. You know,
it's, I'd say
it's a big change.
How was your English at that stage?
School English. Right. You know, I could read.
Yeah, but they were German, so, like, so they actually did it properly. So they could speak English, but we couldn't speak Irish after 18 years of it. But so you would have been probably competent anyway.
I could read, but I couldn't have a conversation.
Yeah.
And I was very worried that if I said it wrong, you know, used wrong grammar, that, you know, I'd be embarrassed. So I said
we're
nothing.
We're not so worried, you know, about the grammar.
No.
We can say hot on that.
No.
So I would say very little, you know, until I kind of, you know, just, I suppose I started a few jobs here and there. I started writing out. I started to, you know, mingle with, you know, my own age kind of people, you know, and all of a sudden then, you know, it took a while though, you know.
And it was Kildare, was it?
We moved to Kildare, yeah.
What part?
What part? We weren't far from the Curragh, actually.
Yeah.
So
Big change.
Yeah, big change.
What did you make of the Curragh people?
Very
loaded question, Johnny.
Yeah.
Shut up.
What are you trying to insinuate about?
It's the true racing community in Ireland, where, like, people about their daily lives are generally doing something that's related to horse racing. So it's a good place to go, like, you know, I would say.
Yeah.
No loaded at all.
No, everyone was very welcoming, you know, and obviously through horses, you had a lot of friends and people and you had something in common, you know.
Yeah.
But I was riding out back at Michael Grassick's in Seniors, and it was just, I had my college done in Germany, and I kind of said to myself, okay, my dad wasn't really too keen on me just working, you know, working in racing, riding out, you know, it's very hard, very hard.
What are you going to be?
It's very high if you don't have the backing, you know.
Yeah. And you need a plan, a career path.
Yeah. And I said, okay, in order to improve my English to get a good job, you know, I better off going to college for a little while. Went to DBS here for a year.
Right.
You know, my English improved, everything, you know, it just kind of came together a little bit. You got to know people. And then I just decided for myself, if I could have, you know, a proper job, as you know, like an office job, you know.
Yeah.
I could fund horses, buy them, produce them, sell them. You know what I mean? So that's where my thinking kind of came from.
So your plan was to get a job and use that to become a pin hooker or a breeder or something.
And
small.
It started off obviously small. I was, you know, just buying a few sport horses and break them, produce them, sell them, and just tip away on my
own. Hang on a second, right? So when did you learn to do all that? Because
I always rode from an early age, but
breaking a horse seems like a very specific skill. That
Yeah. But I learned with good people over in Germany as well, like, you know, and they taught me really well, and I started to just venture off doing my own thing.
And And where are you doing this? Did you have an office job at that point?
Yeah.
Right.
I did. Yeah. I actually did. Worked nearly for almost 10 years for Lidl Ireland.
Right.
So Lidl, you know.
Just coming over.
German connection.
Connection, you know. And their head office was in Newbridge, which was handy.
Yeah.
And they weren't very, like, focused on, and they still aren't, which I think is great, on degrees and all kind of academic kind of.
What would they like to work for, actually?
It's very tough.
Yeah.
Extremely tough.
They probably work hard above you as well.
Work hard, long hours, go, you know.
Yeah.
But you're rewarded, you know.
Yeah.
You're well paid. The whole package, you know, like health insurance, all these things are there, you know.
Mm.
And the other thing is as well, from a young age, if you're streetwise, a bit of cop on to you, and you're willing to work hard, they will give you a lot of responsibility, and you get a team
that
of
empowers
five
you.
People. Yes, exactly. And if you're clever enough and you're dedicated enough, you know, you can do very, very well. You get to management level. You get trained, you know, to improve your management skills, how to deal with staff. You know, all these little issues and. It was a great learning curve for me, you know. I started off in purchasing department, you know, just administration. Worked my way up then to, I was management and accounts for several years then.
Did you ever think, like, I'm going to end up in this and leave racing behind, or was it like?
No, because I continued to grow the horse business, you know, the horses producing them on the side.
How many hours were in the day back then, like 50 or something?
Not enough, do you know what I mean? It was a full-time job with Lidl.
Yeah,
and
another one.
I was getting up early to get the yard done, lunchtime, go home, ride out if I can, and then in the evenings, floodlights and produce, you know, right. It's just, it got bigger and bigger.
So I kind of... There's a dedication here that, yeah. Like, you know, in football, it's the 10-year-old whose left foot is no good and they go out and they spend hour after hour after hour after hour after doing it. You've done exactly the same thing, except in your early adulthood, it's like hour after hour after hour to try and... So you had a dream.
Yeah.
To become a trainer?
I had a dream to do... I'm very ambitious. I don't mind hard work, but... I wanted to achieve, you know, I wanted to do well, especially with horses, you know, and I wanted to go step by step without, you know, getting too far ahead of myself, but build it up gradually, you know.
Yeah.
And I did that, and it grew to such an extent, I suppose, then with my partner, Andrew, as well, that we kind of said, okay, this is, you know, there's a lot of horses for pre-training in, you know, a lot of horses were, you know, buying yearlings and all that. And we kind of, you know, that's a full-time job in itself, you know. I'll either continue and go to the next level with Lidl, or else I'll park that for the moment and just, you know, dive into my own business, you know, which I've been working on for so many years.
Yeah. That's what you wanted to do, right?
Exactly.
But it's still a really hard decision to go, got to cut the cords.
From that steady kind of job, you know. It's a big decision. But yeah, you know, it's touch wood.
I don't think you're ever on your deathbed, though, regretting that you didn't take the chance on a job because it was your dream. Oh, well, I had 40 great years in a job that I was mildly, you know, enthusiastic about. Hmm. I chose my dream because I love it.
Yeah.
You know. And it's, it may have pitfalls, you know, but such is life.
It's there on my CV, all those years I've worked, you know, it's not going to be, it's not going to, if I ever want to go back to it, I can, you know what I mean, the qualifications that I have, and that's how I looked at it. I said, okay, this is a new adventure, you know, I can dive into and give it my all, you know, now.
Yeah. Yeah. Where did it go for Freddie then while all this was going on? So did he come over at the same time, roughly?
Freddie went over, my mum, Freddie and I came over together, and yeah, he was... he was in school, so he's a little bit younger than me, so he was in NACE, he was in school, so my mom kind of insisted, you know, finish your leaving cert, everything, and he was apprenticed to Dermot Weld for a certain amount of time until he finished school, so he was riding out early in the mornings, a couple of lots, and then he'd go to school. And then he signed up to Jim Bulger's.
Not a bad start.
Exactly, yeah.
And two world-class trainers in your trip to Ireland.
Yeah, and he learned, I think, an awful lot there, horsemanship, everything, you know. And then I suppose, you know, England was on the agenda, you know. And yeah, look, you know, he worked extremely hard to get to where he was riding-wise, you know. Yeah.
How is he doing now?
He's doing good now. He's got...
I can't but admire his attitude. He's just, you never get any, he said something that changed your life, but when you see him on the telly, it's just like, well, I'm really enjoying doing what I'm doing now, and I'm still here, and I'm enjoying life, and there's certainly a lot to be learned from the way he dealt with adversity.
Yeah, I admire him, really, because it's a very hard thing to take, you know.
So 3 years ago now?
3 years, exactly.
What was your recollection of what happened, or how were you told?
And
he was absolutely flying it at the time.
Yes.
Like, he was a really good rider, loads of winners.
Prix de l'Opera, just won three weeks before that, and my mum and I were there, you know. Arc Day was... unbelievable, you know. It was the highlight of everything he worked for, you know. We were very proud, and and then it was all over, you know, in a way. It was harder literally for me to accept that was it, like, you know.
Is it just the two of you in the family?
Yes, and we're very close. We're very close family, you know. Yeah. And it was...
Were you watching the race around tonight?
I didn't watch it. Andrew watched it, and he rang me straight away. He said, "I think there's a problem here, you know." And then they tried to get in contact with my mum and I, and then I took the next flight over. And
So, for people who don't know what happened, what did happen?
He was involved in an accident at Kempton, and
on the all weather,
yeah. And he is now a T7 complete. paralysis. He, yeah.
From so the waist down?
From the chest down. T7 is actually high enough, actually.
Right.
So, yeah, it took a lot of adapting, you know, to new life. Mm. It's literally the word. You got to adapt. And my mom, she's top woman in our lives, you know, like she's the go-to person for advice, and she's there for him to help him with everything that he needs, you know. Although he is getting more and more independent, he's doing his thing, you know, he's got a good, you know, job, he loves the TV work, and he's really diving into kind of bloodstock industry, and, you know, he's just literally studying all the catalogues, and it's something that I suppose he didn't have time for when he was writing, you know, because you're always on the go. Mm. Now it's all pages, breeding, form, everything, and I'm very proud of him, you know, how he's
You got to be proud of how good he was as well, because he came from relative obscurity to be like a top rider,
yeah.
And everyone would have been happy to have Freddie on a horse.
Yeah.
And he may even not have peaked when he got his accident. So, as a brother, like for somebody in your family to go as high as he did, peak of his career, was an amazing achievement, I think.
Amazing. Yeah.
You know?
And he's taller than me. You know, mm. He's, you know, he had to manage weight, everything. You know, which is obviously, you know, every jockey nowadays nearly has to, you know, it's a tough thing, you know, but look, he was rewarded when he went to Richard Fahey's. He worked hard and, you know, he was apprentice champion, you know, and it grew from there. Mm. And, you know, to have speedy boarding that time, you know, it was a special mare for him, you know. Yeah. So they still kind of, he goes and visits her with the foals and, you know. And
the story goes on.
Goes on, exactly. Yeah. It does go on, but, you know, it's just a lot of adapting that needed to be done, you know.
Did you guys have to adapt too? And, you know, because obviously the person who has the accident is living through the accident, and they're constantly focused on recovery, but you guys have a mourning process to go through as well, watching it for the different life that he's now going to have.
Yeah, everything changes, you know, everything is different. So you just have to prepare yourself, I suppose, more, you know, when you want to do things, or everything takes a little longer maybe, you know, but he's got a good routine now, and, you know, it works really well. But like I said, my mom, you know, she's a huge help, you know.
Yeah.
She's top woman, you know. She's just, even when you're having a bad day, you know, she'll just kind of, she'll have her ways to get you out of it, you know.
Sounds like a stereotypical Irish mammy, in fairness.
Yeah.
I think with things like that as well, and with all the jockeys that this happens to, if they were offered sort of the chance to start over again, and you know the dangers, you know what happened to you, would you go straight back into it? And they'd be all, absolutely yes. They know the dangers, and it's just, they love it too much not to do it. And people don't really appreciate that it's a complete bug, that, like, just, you just want to ride horses, and you know, you might be riding at 40, 45 miles an hour, knowing that if you fall out of a car at 45 miles an hour, it's not going to be nice, and it could be very bad on fast ground or on the all weather, but you love it. Because it's an amazing thrill.
Yeah.
You know.
And he would say the same.
Yeah.
You know. Mm. It's just something very special, isn't it? And unique if you experience it. Like, look, race riding, I've only literally had a couple of rides myself.
Oh, there
now,
you go.
Look, you know, it's harmless. I'm harmless, right? You know, it's just, I'd like to.
Didn't get the experience.
I want to.
Just weren't riding long enough.
Well, I got a couple of rides on first Taboo, you know, my own horse there. You know, I wanted to gain a little bit of race riding experience, so I know this side, you know, of racing for training. Yeah. You
when
know?
Was that? When did you do that?
Recently, like, oh, right. You know, a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I was going to ask, because, like, so your dad's a champion jockey, your brother's a great jockey. You must have thought
you were last to boogie.
Like,
literally, yeah.
Yeah.
But did first dad jockey here?
Only I made dance.
Yeah.
But he won just after the accident, wasn't it? It was very shortly after, because I remember first to boogie.
Yeah.
3 years ago, is it?
It is, yeah.
I was at the race, Ferry House, well backed. Terrible day, if I remember rightly. And one of these strange, like, not a huge race, but very loaded with emotion for everyone that was there, because there aren't that many Tylitskis, so, like, it's clear that everyone knows they're related. And then it's like, well, that's Freddie's sister, you know, blah, blah, blah. That must have been amazing as well.
It was. And I have to say, like, obviously, I was in the hospital a lot with my mum. And then Andrew was running the yard, the place, and there was a lot of people helping
this is
out.
Andrew Canirons as well, Canirons, which would be very well known in race.
And everyone was helping. There's people coming in to ride out, and everyone was really on board. And I have to say a big thank you to everyone, because it was.
It's nice when people rally though. Like Pat's 100%. Mullen got bad news again this weekend, and you can see racing immediately come into its kind of circle of rallying support.
It's the people are very good that way, and it never even stopped throughout the years. Everyone's still asking and trying to help here and there. We boogied that day. That was special, and it was very heavy fog. We couldn't see the race
It
was just literally last couple of hundred yards.
Like,
I think it was
first the boogie was going well going into the bend.
and then silence.
First the boogie's in front, first the boogie wins, you're like, okay, happy days.
Happy days, yeah.
I'd prefer if I could have seen the race, but at least he won. Yeah.
No, that was a very special day. And we did a bit of celebrating that evening.
You don't celebrate that, what do you want to celebrate?
You have to.
That's only a couple of months after you get your trainer's license, is that right?
It is, yeah. I think it was June I got my license and had very few runners, between June and boogie then,
So the bit where you leave Lidl and become a trainer, what happens in that bit?
Literally working hard
with
the
express intention of becoming a trainer?
Yeah. We had a lot of pre-trainers. We had a lot of, horses for big clients, and we had a lot of horses there, 2-year-olds. We bought them as yearlings, 2-year-olds that we were selling that went on to do well. And we said, it was kind of natural progression to
maybe
take
keep one of these.
So many people just say that. If everyone else is doing it like the Cranberries, why can't we,
So it was just natural progression to say, here, we'll take out a license and run a few. And, obviously, ideally 2-year-olds, it buying and selling, that's what you want to be doing, training alone.
If you have the expensive potential purchasers, you have a nice 2-year-old, and with all due respect, it helps to be a small trainer that they don't know, because the theory is that if a small trainer can train this horse, we could, this horse could be anything, and they might know anything about your ability as a trainer, So if you have a rich client in wherever, like the Arabs or to go to Hong Kong down the line or wherever, that's where the money is. The money isn't really in training, unfortunately.
No. I'm not the first one to confirm that. I won't be the last. Yeah, it's a tough game to be in,
But you clearly love it, like that.
And so I do. Yeah.
That bit where you get your license and you win your first race, that's like we are good at this.
Mm. Yeah, things came together.
And he was a staying jumper as well, like.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a little legend around the place. He's been very good to us, and he's a lovely little horse to have in the yard. He has a lot of problems, but when he's right, he'll try his best for us. So it's nice to have him. He's spoiled rotten at home.
You are a dual purpose trainer. You'll train.
Yeah.
Hey, what's the difference?
The difference, I suppose, to find them out. You're with flat horses. You know where you're at. I suppose a little bit. Earlier kind of than National Hunt but I love both. I grew up in flat racing, but I love when a horse takes to jumping really well, we have this season we have a lot more flat horses than we have jumpers, for the winter there's a few coming back in now, and a few from the flat coming, that have potential, and we'll go on.
So you find out in the yard if they're jumpers, if they're good jumpers, you can tell from at some point along the line if a 2-year is the process. You want everything to be like every horse is hopefully going to be a Derby horse, and then you realize, well, it's not really got to. You rein in your expectations, and suddenly it's a sprinter or whatever, and then it's like, oh, maybe this one, we'll try more of a jump and see how they go.
Yeah,
According to the breeding, maybe you would know already.
The breeding, you'd have an idea anyway, by looking at the horse, the breeding, when you go to buy them, But I suppose we have a good routine at home with them. We try and train the individual. We've just about always in around 15 horses riding out. And what we like to do is just do little things, maybe different, and when we're when we're working them, you know, we try and mix things up a little bit training wise, you know, and a lot of them would go and pop a hurdle or, you know, go school and just to keep it interesting, the training itself, you know.
Right.
So you can tell maybe earlier on, you know, if something takes to it, you know.
They're the little individual olds, things, you know, that you do differently.
Yeah, exactly.
Big yards can't
do
that really as well. That's the joy of the small yards. Just don't have time because it's too many horses.
It's time, which I like, you know, about us, you know, the way we do things, you know. I don't think, personally, I wouldn't want to go big, you know, numbers-wise. I like the attention to detail, maybe, and I suppose the little things that we do differently, you know, horses getting turned out every day, everything, you know, and just making little changes. It's very, very small margins that can win
so
or lose races,
there.
You know, so small. And if you have something that, you know, we're there 24/7 with the horses, you get to know them really well. And if there's something small that you could change, even if it's, you know, stabling, you know, just a change of scenery, you know, it could win or lose your races, little things like that, you know. It's just an example, you know.
Head is a big margin, you know.
If you can keep their heads right, you know, the getting fit part, you know, comes naturally, you know.
Yeah.
We've got to take a quick break. Madeline's going to stay with us. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. We'll be right back after this.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
All right, Jerry, welcome back to Friday Night Racing here on Off the Ball every Friday afternoon. We also are every Friday evening on the Off the Ball show on News Talk as well. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. Madeline, in terms of how the season is going for you at the moment, I think you've had three winners from about 30 odds. Run so a 10% win rate, which is really good.
Yeah,
it is.
A couple of placings. Yeah. No, we're happy enough, you know.
Yeah. What's the difference between a good season and a bad season? Like, obviously wins, but like, how can you tell before a season starts? Yeah, this is great. Everybody's at it.
Well, yeah, at the start of the season, you'll have a look around and
they're all champions.
And say, okay, there's potential here.
Yeah.
That's promising, but then things, you know, don't always go to plan. That's just horses, you know. But yeah, we're overall very happy how things are going. Couple of nice horses that came through. So, you know, you had Port Lions, for example. You know, he was well sourced, well spotted. Freddie sourcing. Yeah. He was very good. He saw him and said, I think we have a chance with him, you know.
He was a horse that was with Mick Calford and raced primarily at Dundalk, and I think he must have taken him 8 to 10 races to win, but he was always second or third. And it's always a philosophical debate among punters and horsemen, like, is this horse
really good?
Is he ever going to win, or does he actually want to win? And I would nearly always be saying, well, he's actually consistent and it's just not happened for him yet. That's kind of probably right with him anyway.
Port Lions arrived and he took to our little system really well, you know. And we tried to, same thing, we tried to keep it very interesting for him because, you know, he knew racing inside out at that stage, you know. So you had to introduce little things, you know. We go to the beach, we bring them to the river.
Beach for you guys then?
Up in Dublin, you know, we bring them, a couple of jockeys in the mornings and bring them out and just... Yeah, look, it freshens their mind, body, and soul. It's like for us.
Yeah.
A day away, you know, from your routine, and yes, it takes up a lot of time, you know. But if you get results like that, we're happy.
Happy days.
We'll do it.
Yeah.
So that's July. You won the feature race in Limerick with Port Lions.
Yeah. And he won in Ace as well.
Right.
Yeah. So he was a lovely horse, you know.
Sold to Bahrain.
Yes. Yeah. He's gone.
Right.
There you go. It's you know. If
great. Right.
You gotta keep a business. You know what I mean.
Yeah, no,
he's
totally
a lovely horse to have, but we had to let him go. You know.
And is there a celebration when you see a horse off like that? It's like a child going off into the world, or is it?
Yeah, celebration in a way. Yeah, of course. You know, it's good. It's a result. That's what you want, you know. But at the same time, obviously, you're kind of,
you miss him about the
race. Yeah, you do. You know what I mean? You kind of, you clicked with him. We got a great tune out of him, you know. And it was real team effort with him, you know. Like Freddie, Andrew, myself, you know, Billy won on him. You know, Billy Lee rides out for us, you know, twice a week.
Right.
He'd ride work and he was part of the team.
What a rider.
He's won him. Yeah.
Yeah, what
so,
a rider.
You know, we're just, it was really combined team effort, and I enjoyed it.
It's even funny being at Gavin's. I was on about Tabrass, a horse that I was involved in, and he was very, like, he's very ordinary, run of the mill. But
we win a lot since you got rid of him, Johnny.
He did win since, but the amount of people were saying we loved him about the place. He just was a great character. And it's funny, just these horses, they just have their own manners, and some of them are probably a bit contrary, but they're also lovable. And when they're gone, then you probably do miss them, like you'd miss your pet dog or whatever.
Yeah, you would, yeah. And out of six runs, we had two wins.
Right.
Two wins and two placings, I think. Mm. Yeah. Two placings. Yeah, exactly. That's good.
All horses were like
brilliant.
That. You'd be like happy days.
Exactly. Yeah. If we can find another one like that, you know, we'll do well.
Freddie's on the case.
He's on the case. You know, horse and training sales. You know, you can pick up horses like him. Yeah. And he was an absolute natural to jump at home.
Was he? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Wouldn't get 2 miles.
No, I probably, you know, it was just something to introduce to him, like, you know, just
keep. See, Valentine was very well bought as well. Like, he was the horse racing trainer, and he was old when he was bought, like, so it can, people look at a horse, he's 8 or 9, like, what am I going to get out of here? But if he's sound and he's genuine, you know, change of routine, you'd never, he can win. If a horse was rated 90 in the past, he might be capable of running a big handicap again, you know?
Yeah.
And as
so you bought him, mostly he'd been racing in Dundalk, but it turned out he was a jumper.
He never went jumping, but he loved jumping, but he wouldn't stay 2 miles if they went that route, I would have thought. Yeah, but who's to say as well, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what does the rest of the season hold for you?
We have still a couple of nice horses. I think Mary Salome, you know, she's a lovely, lovely filly. She's 3-year-old, you know, she's done well for us. We bought her as a yearling, and she's had 8 runs only. So she's slightly raced enough. You know, she's won twice. She's second twice, I think, as well. And, you know, I think we still haven't seen the best of her yet. She's growing, continuously growing. Mm. Fine big filly, and I would definitely be confident to say that there could be a bit of black type in her. So she's exciting.
When do they stop growing? As a matter of interest, when does a 3-year-old filly stop growing? You're kind of like
3, 4. You know,
the individual as well.
The individual, yeah.
Right.
All depends on breeding as well, I suppose. You know.
Like the Horse Logician that won in Yorkshire in the week looks to be an outstanding favourite for the Ledger. Like just total out now, 3-year-old still grown into a beautiful, beautiful big horse, and I'd say that's exciting for a trainer when you're like, I don't even need to race him this year. Just wait.
Yeah.
When you see the spurt, then you're like, happy days.
Like when 2-year-olds this year, we haven't actually had any 2-year-old runs yet, because you could tell early on we broke them before Christmas. We give them a little break over Christmas. It's every year the same, and we kind of said, oh, they're gonna need a bit of time here, you know. There's no rush with them. So we gave them every chance to kind of grow into themselves, and they're starting to, there's one or two that stand out. Nice filly, actually, that I look forward to running in the next couple of weeks. So
keep an eye out.
Keep an eye out.
We'll mark that one down in our little black books. Yeah. Right, I want to tell you that the Tout Irish Injured Jockeys Fund remains at €6,959 after Sonaila ran down the field at Cork last weekend. You're looking.
I think that was Salsa, was it?
Was it?
Yeah. Very disappointing. If we're talking about Boogie and Salsa, didn't dance very long in Cork, unfortunately. It was disappointing. I think that's what that was. Unless somebody else tipped it. Was I even here last week?
I don't know, Johnny. Who can tell 1 week to the next?
No.
Oh, Tom Malone was here. Tom Malone was here. Yeah, fair enough.
Well, that lost as well, anyway.
My
nap would also have lost.
The August Festival continues at the picturesque Killarney Racecourse this weekend, along with an evening jumps card from Kilbeggan tomorrow. The £1 million Ebor handicap is the highlight of the final day of the York Ebor Festival, and Ger Lyons obviously hopes to land the spoils with Mustagir in that one. So, Tote customers can enjoy free racecourse tickets to selected meetings across the year. Check out thetote.com for more details. What are the offers this week?
Yeah, it's I don't know if you've been watching York. Great stuff this week.
I tried it in between.
The Sky Bet City of York Stakes Group 2 quite interesting because Lawrence should take the beat in the filly, who obviously won at Leopard Sound last year on Champions Weekend. Labravido of Aidens might give him one more chance. He's a Siouni horse, came from France, been disappointing, to be fair. Went back to France last year, probably tripped maybe a bit wrong. Gordon Lord Byron must be having his 947th start. He's definitely had over 100 runs. What a horse for Tom Hogan.
Yeah.
He's in with a chance as well. That's in the 3 o'clock at York. The big race, the Ebor, which is now, I think, is it a £1 million race?
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely colossal prize money. And
600 grand for the winner.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. You'd have a good jump horse now, and you'd be thinking, if this is a good jump horse, if he's of a right flat rating, he could be an Ebor horse. And I think Willie Mullins might have a chance here with Max Dynamite. He has the class. He won an Egg and Spoon race the last day, but he's 16-20-1. I think he could go well.
Yeah. I actually rode in Killarney in that race that he won.
How did the race ride? What did it feel like?
Look, I missed the start.
Insiders, you missed the start. Yeah, like Tom Malone in the charity race.
Looked good.
I could just about make him out in the distance, but he's a good horse.
He's a good horse.
Class animal, to be fair. You know, he's travelled Japanese bred, I think. But and obviously in the big race in Killarney.
Is Max Dynamite your tip for the weekend?
My tip for the weekend is actually running a fairly run-of-the-mill race in Kilbeggan.
Oh, should tell us the Killarney. Talk to us about Killarney.
Killarney, so the conclusion of what was the an excellent festival in Killarney, as Madeline alluded to earlier. The weather wasn't the May West down there, but they have a decent-ish renewal of the big race, if I can get it up here.
The Dunloe Hotel and Gardens Vincent O'Brien Ruby Stakes.
Vincent O'Brien Ruby Stakes, yeah. I've been at this meeting a few times. It's just a Killarney. I mean, I travelled Cork and Kerry there last week, and I've said this a few times since, like, there's no country like Ireland, really, for anything you want in terms of, as long as the weather is nice, and Killarney is just stunning. And what a racetrack with the backdrop and everything. Lovely to ride or to have anything to do with the horse down there. I'm going to give another sort of one last chance to Firefly, who was disappointing at Galway. Very well bred filly. She kind of could do a win in a race like this. Well drawn under Seamus Heffernan.
Okay, so Firefly in Killarney at 2:30 on Saturday. Yeah. So your tip for the weekend?
The tip for the weekend is trained by Tony Mullins. Josefina in the 640. I think there's going to be an awful lot of pace in this race, and I think Josefina will just lob away out the back and stalk and stalk and stalk and hopefully come late in the 640 Kilbeggan. I think the weather's okay for the weekend, so they might have reasonably nice ground at Kilbeggan. Very warm today, actually, outside.
The weather's supposed to be good.
Yeah. So make the most of it. Cracking card at the Curragh this evening. Gotten into that. If you're listening to this live, definitely the Curragh will be a cracking card. I think the Riptide Movement is on. Movement after racing some of the two-year-old races beautifully bred horses, and they'll be gleaming in the summer sunshine, and the Curragh under Pat Keogh's management as well, just starting off its latest chapter. So excellent day's racing. Riptide Movement, not a bad band at all as well to finish it off.
Is this the first time they've had bands at the Curragh? Is this the first year of it, or
had bands, but I don't know, is it more of a feature now? The Friday night thing obviously suits it, but All Saints were at Leopard Sound last week, and it seemed to be absolutely
mobbed,
which is great. And a lot of the racecourse probably could remember All Saints. Maybe we're attracted to some of them, and said, if we don't back a horse, at least we can admire the music of the All Saints. Maybe they like their music. I don't know. But anyway, Leopard Sound and the Curragh, exciting days ahead of Champions Weekend next month as well.
Yeah, and we'll start picking off horses now that you should be watching ahead of Champions Weekend. Over the next
couple weeks. Madeline's filly as well. Before all of this, the 2-year-old to come?
2-year-old, yeah.
Just have to look out for a 2-year-old filly trained by Madeline.
Yeah, exactly.
What more do you want?
Yeah, well, we'll get a name.
Touch wood. Yeah.
Japan winning during the week.
A special race, and I really mean that. I might have given out a bit yesterday about the ban that Ryan Moore got for his use of the whip on a horse that was winning. I thought it took away from the. I thought it was a complete joke, to be quite honest with you. The rule is maybe the rule. I think we should maybe focus more on Enable and Japan's willingness for 3 furlongs when he was seriously, it was like a kind of a marathon runner when he's hit the wall. Japan was, like, you could tell it was tough for him, but he just, his Galileo bred will to win, will to win, will to win, to beat Crystal Ocean, which he wasn't really entitled to do, advertised the will of the horse, the genius of Aidan O'Brien, that to get this horse to just improve that little bit to be the horse rated 124 or whatever he is, probably sets up for a clash in the Champion Stakes. I'd love to see Japan running the Ledger. I think he wants a trip, taking on Logician would be an amazing race, but I'd say they might go the Leopardstown route, but what a race, absolutely amazing race, brilliantly timed ride by Ryan Moore, and a fantastic week at York as well.
All right, good stuff, Madeline. Thanks for joining us today. Best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you very much for having us. Thank you.
Johnny, hopefully we've got another winner. That 6,959 is a figure we've been on now for a couple of weeks. So.
Well, we did a 7-1 winner 2 weeks ago.
You did?
Yeah. You know. Cracking name.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Don't talk about the dinner you had 2 weeks ago for too long, though, do you?
What's rare is wonderful.
Yeah.
Right.
For that, Ger.
Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. Thanks very much.
Friday Night Racing. On Off the Ball.